It was the first time either had worn the insosuits, which marked one time more than either had expected to upon their arrival the day before, and they tested their limb movements uncomfortably. The insosuit was far bulkier and far uglier than the regulation spacesuit, but withal considerably lighter due to the fact that they were entirely non-metallic in composition. Composed of heat-resistant plastic and chemically treated cork layers, and equipped with a desiccating unit to keep the air bone dry, the insosuits could withstand the full glare of Mercury's sun for 20 minutes. 5 to 10 minutes more as well, without actually killing the occupant. And still the robot's hands formed the stirrup, nor did he betray the slightest atom of surprise at the grotesque figure into which Powell had been converted. Powell's radio harshened voice boomed out, "Are you ready to take us to exit 13A? "Yes, master." Good, thought Powell. They might lack radio control, but at least they were fitted for radio reception. "Mount one or the other, Mike," he said to Donovan. He placed a foot in the improvised stirrup and swung upward. He found the seat comfortable. There was the humped back of the robot, evidently shaped for the purpose, a shallow groove along each shoulder for the thighs, and two elongated ears, whose purpose now seemed obvious. Powell seized the ears and twisted the head. His mount turned ponderously. "Lead on, Macduff." But he did not feel at all lighthearted. The gigantic robots moved slowly, with mechanical precision, through the doorway that cleared their heads by a scant foot, so that the two men had to duck hurriedly, along a narrow corridor in which their unhurried footsteps boomed monotonously and into the airlock. The long, airless tunnel that stretched to a pinpoint before them brought home forcefully to Powell the exact magnitude of the task accomplished by the first expedition, with their crude robots and their start-from-scratch necessities. They might have been a failure, but their failure was a good deal better than the usual run of the system's successes. The robots plodded onward with a pace that never varied and with footsteps that never lengthened. Powell said, "Notice that these tunnels are blazing with lights and that the temperature is Earth normal. It's probably been like this all the 10 years that this place has remained empty." "How's that?" "Cheap energy. Cheapest in the system. Sun power, you know, and on Mercury's sun side, sun power is something. That's why the station was built in the sunlight rather than in the shadow of a mountain. It's really a huge energy converter. The heat is turned into electricity, light, mechanical work, and what have you, so that energy is supplied and the station is cooled in a simultaneous process." "Look," said Donovan, "this is all very educational, but would you mind changing the subject? It so happens that this conversion of energy that you talk about is carried on by the photo cell banks mainly, and that is a tender subject with me at the moment." Powell grunted vaguely, and when Donovan broke the resulting silence, it was to change the subject completely. "Listen, Greg, what the devil's wrong with Speedy anyway? I can't understand it." It's not easy to shrug shoulders in an inso suit, but Powell tried it. "I don't know, Mike. You know he's perfectly adapted to a Mercurian environment. Heat doesn't mean anything to him, and he's built for the light gravity and the broken ground. He's foolproof. Or at least he should be." Silence fell. This time, silence that lasted. "Master," said the robot, "we are here." "Eh?" Powell snapped out of a semi-drowse. "Well, get us out of here. Out to the surface." They found themselves in a tiny substation, empty, airless, ruined. Donovan had inspected a jagged hole in the upper reaches of one of the walls by the light of his pocket flash. "Meteorite, do you suppose?" he had asked. Powell shrugged. "To hell with that. It doesn't matter. Let's get out." A towering cliff of a black basaltic rock cut off the sunlight, and the deep night shadow of an airless world surrounded them. Before them, the shadow reached out and ended in knife-edge abruptness into an all but unbearable blaze of white light that glittered from myriad crystals along a rocky ground. "Space," gasped Donovan. "It looks like snow." And it did. Powell's eyes swept the jagged glitter of mercury to the horizon and winced at the gorgeous brilliance. "This must be an unusual area," he said. "The general albedo of mercury is low, and most of the soil is gray pumice. Something like the moon, you know. Beautiful, isn't it?" He was thankful for the light filters in their visiplates. Beautiful or not, a look at the sunlight through straight glass would have blinded them inside of half a minute. Donovan was looking at the spring thermometer on his wrist. "Holy smokes, the temperature is 80 centigrade. Powell checked his own and said, "A little high. Atmosphere, you know." "On Mercury? Are you nuts?" "Mercury isn't really airless," explained Powell in absent-minded fashion. He was adjusting the binocular attachments to his visiplate, and the bloated fingers of the insosuit were clumsy at it. "There's a thin exhalation that clings to its surface. Vapors of the more volatile elements and compounds that are heavy enough for Mercurian gravity to retain. You know, selenium, iodine, mercury, gallium, potassium, bismuth, volatile oxides. The vapors sweep into the shadows and condense, giving up heat. It's a sort of gigantic still. In fact, if you use your flash, you'll probably find that the side of the cliff is covered with, say, hoar sulfur, or maybe quicksilver dew. It doesn't matter, though. Our suits can stand a measly 80 indefinitely." Powell had adjusted the binocular attachment so that he seemed as eye-stalked as a snail. Donovan watched tensely. "See anything?" The other did not answer immediately, and when he did, his voice was anxious and thoughtful. "There's a dark spot on the horizon that might be the selenium pool. It's in the right place, but I don't see Speedy." Powell clambered upward in an instinctive striving for better view till he was standing in unsteady fashion upon his robot's shoulders. Legs straddled wide, eyes straining, he said, I think, yes, it's definitely he. He's coming this way." Donovan followed the pointing finger. He had no binoculars, but there was a tiny moving dot, black against the blazing brilliance of the crystalline ground. "I see him," he yelled. "Let's get going." Powell had hopped down into a sitting position on the robot again, and his suited hand slapped against the gargantuan's barrel chest. "Get going." "Giddy up," yelled Donovan, and thumped his heels, spur fashion.